Okay. I just press space bar. Okay. Thank you for the opportunity to speak here. I'm Artur Chobanyan. I'm a grad student here at Penn State. The title of my talk is Effective Constraints. I'll be reporting on work I've done in collaboration with Martin Boerwald, Barbara Zandhofer, and Aureliano Skrzyzewski. We've submitted our initial findings to reviews of mathematical physics. So the talk will be about constraints. A few introductory remarks are in order. I hope Martin has convinced everybody that effective equations are useful. What I want to talk about is how they can be extended to systems with constraints. Constraints are basically functions on classical phase space. We have to set them to zero to restrict to a physically accessible region of phase space. The constraints arise naturally from the action principle and typically indicate presence of gauge degrees of freedom. When it comes to quantizing systems with constraints, one could think of solving the constraints before quantizing the system. In certain cases, especially where the constraint is expected to provide dynamics, it's desirable to keep, it's crucial to keep the gauge freedom throughout the quantization. For those cases, one typically follows a prescription due to Dirac, namely that constraints should be quantized, the constraint functions should be quantized when we quantize the system, and we will demand that we will have to restrict to the portion of Hilbert space which is annihilated by the constraint operator. It is clear what to do if such physical states exist, are part of our kinematical Hilbert space, we just restrict to a subspace of it. Otherwise, people typically have to construct this physical Hilbert space out of distributional solutions on the kinematical Hilbert space. And this physical Hilbert space of distributional solutions doesn't inherit inner product from the kinematical Hilbert space. The physical inner product has to be defined. The procedure is very non-trivial in certain cases. Can be achieved, as people keep mentioning, using group averaging and other techniques. So what I want to address here is whether there is a simpler technique to get just the corrections for systems with constraints. So here's the idea of what I would like to do. I'd like to enlarge the classical phase space by including several of the leading order quantum parameters. And the constraints should be appropriately modified to accommodate for this enlarged classical phase space. And the hope is that this procedure can be easier achieved than at least for leading order corrections than doing the full thing. So maybe we can say something about a theory where the Hilbert physical Hilbert space and physical inner product haven't been constructed yet. So these quantum parameters will be some functions of expectation values. Just as an example that they truly measure some kind of the level of quantumness of the system is that classically the expectation value of nth order of an observable and the nth order of the expectation value of the observable are the same thing. The fact that they don't match in quantum mechanics is a departure from classical behavior. We will need to modify the geometric structure of this phase space if we're including additional quantum parameters. So we'll need to provide some kind of geometry associated with the new parameters we introduce. And initial inspiration for our work comes from geometrical approaches to quantum mechanics, where expectation values of observables are basically functions on a symplectic manifold. And amongst other works, I refer you to a detailed analysis by Ashtekar and Troy Schilling. In this talk, we'll focus on systems with finite dimensional classical phase space. So ordinary quantum mechanical systems with constraints and mini superspace models. We will formulate a suitable analog of a Dirac condition on the expectation values directly, and through an example show how this can lead to quantum corrections. So the idea here is to try and introduce the minimum amount of structure that we need to basically formulate constraints directly on the expectation values. So we, in particular, here are some basic assumptions. We assume that we're dealing with a quantum system that is well understood in the absence of constraints. Some static system where observables form some known associative algebra. We can, for any two observables, we can take their product, and this is part of the algebra, such that the commutator produced by permuting two elements of the algebra is basically inherited from the classical Poisson algebra. It's the quantized version of the classical Poisson algebra. We assume, furthermore, that there is a single constraint, a chosen element of our algebra, some polynomial in observables with some ordering already chosen. We will not worry about ordering here. And we assume there is no true Hamiltonian. We just have a single constraint. So this algebra, it just lives there on its own. And we haven't referred to any particular Hilbert space, although in practice one would often get the associative algebra through action of observables on the Hilbert space. So but we will try and avoid reference to a Hilbert space. Instead, we'll talk about the space of all linear maps from an algebra to complex numbers that are normalized. Just to get some kind of a picture of what kind of objects I might be talking about. If we do have a Hilbert space and there is some density state on it, we can map observable linearly to a number by taking trace with the density state. Typically, yes, but here I'm trying to not introduce things that I can't use yet. So maybe there is ways to make it useful in what I'm doing. So I'm not. Right. Okay, so we notice, how do we formulate, so this space of all linear maps from our algebra to complex numbers is what I will want to think of as a very, very much extended phase space, and then we'll reduce it in steps. So in order to formulate the constraint condition, we first note that the elements of our algebra naturally act on these linear maps to produce another linear map on two sides, from the left and from the right. So we can define action of this element A on a map alpha from the left, and then it will map another element B to what original alpha would map this ordered product AB with A appearing on the left. And then exactly the same way we can define the action of these algebra elements on the maps from the right. So there are two immediate possible analogs of Dirac condition that we can apply to this extended phase space. First we can demand that constraint annihilates these maps by acting on the left. And second, we can demand that a constraint annihilates maps by acting on the right. So the first one would imply that the map will map all elements of algebra where constraint appears on the left to zero. And the same thing for the other way for the right action of the constraint. In many cases of interest, just looking at algebras, we can satisfy one but not both. For example, if we just take algebra generated by a canonical pair, X and P, that is subject to canonical commutation relation, and demand that our constraint is X, is the X operator, and we suppose X annihilates some map by acting on the left, then in particular that means that the linear map will map this product XP to zero, And then it's a very simple use of linearity and normalization and commutation relation that this map has to map the reverse product Px to negative IH bar. And hence, X cannot also be annihilating this map by acting on the right. So this in particular is why we start off using complex maps. Maybe it would have been easier to use a real maps. So from this point onwards, we pick as our condition just by convention, just as a convention, that constraint should annihilate our maps by acting on the right. And potentially this, as you can see, this, to satisfy this condition, we have to go in principle through all elements of our algebra. And depending on the structure of this algebra, there could be an infinite number of conditions of this type. Now, for other work where constraints on expectation values were used, where much more additional structure was used, and the number of constraints actually just reduces to one, can look at the work by Alejandro Carrici, present here. So this giant phase space, the space of all linear maps, forms in a very trivial way, is a complex affine space, and so a differential manifold. So we can add two linear maps, and the normalization condition only demands that the coefficients will add up to one, so that we get another normalized map. Each element of our algebra assigns a function on this phase space. And I'll just use the expectation value notation and drop reference to a point in this phase space. And basically, each point on this phase space, because is entirely defined by all values such functions take at it, because that's after all, what a linear map is. If we know how it acts on all elements of the algebra, we know what it is. If we have a basis, a linear basis in our algebra, then we have a somewhat easier task. The expectation values of those basis elements form a natural set of coordinates on this phase space. The phase space gamma is equipped with a natural Poisson structure that's defined by the algebra commutator. So any two functions have a Poisson, that are derived from our operators, we can take a Poisson bracket of them by just taking the function corresponding to their commutator. This can be extended to nonlinear functions by demanding that we can take square various powers of these and then demand that Leibniz rule be satisfied. So just to get a picture of what's going on, this Poisson, the vector fields can be thought of as generators of at least on a formal level, can be thought of as generators of invertible transformations, as coming from generators of invertible transformations on our algebra. So it's not clear at all whether these objects would be well defined in any given algebra, but at least formally, that's the picture one may have. So the set of constraints using the functions now will have the form that expectation value of any operator of any algebra element such that C appears on the right vanishes. This again defines a linear submanifold of our phase space, and so which we will call constraint surface. And these constraint functions are closed with respect to the Poisson bracket that we've defined on the previous slide, which is very easy to verify. We take Poisson bracket between two of those, we get another constraint. Not at the moment. The thing is that some maps will, the constraint will force some maps to then be not positive. If we demand that we start with this quantum system that we understand in the absence of constraint, and then not all of the observables will be mapped positively when we demand the constraint. For example, if we go if we go back up to the silly example with x and p, so what I mean is this product px, if we take a symmetrized product px minus plus xp, that would still be mapped to ih bar if we demand this, because what I'm saying is I understand that this isn't the same as star relation, but if we demand those elements, so the x star is x and p star is p, then the maps that satisfy the constraint condition won't be positive on some of those elements.
I actually did a lot of this in my thesis work, and so I
can't
remember. And so I think the idea is that these operators are, they form a right or left idea. And
yeah.
Quotient the whole, and the ones just can equal to zero. And you can quotient the whole algebra by that, and then everything is perfectly fine.
Well, okay, it would be great to talk about that later. Okay, so having this phase space picture, we have basically a first class system of constraints. They're closed, and they will generate flows on this constraint submanifold, and we interpret them as basically gauge transformations that need to be factored out, and true degrees of freedom, in our understanding, are basically the gauge invariant functions on our constraint surface. And one may get worried right about now that we're dealing with a Poisson structure rather than a symplectic structure. So the next few points are basically to reassure that as far as what you do in the usual classical constraint analysis, you can do analogous things on Poisson manifolds. And with a view, if we do need to truncate the system of constraints, we should preserve the Poisson structure and the closure. If we should do it, we can't do it completely indiscriminately. So the example is not cutting edge research. It's a free Newtonian particle, so it's a fairly elementary, but it gives some idea of how this leads to quantum corrected phase space. So the steps that we follow here should apply to any polynomial constraint in algebra that's generated by some finite dimensional Lie algebra. So the free system, the system without the constraint, is two canonical pairs Q and P, and a canonical pair that corresponds to time and its conjugate momentum. We assume that our algebra consists of identity, multiplicative identity, and all-ordered polynomials in the canonical variables subject to the canonical commutation relation. So QP give us IH bar, TPT give IH bar, and they commute across the pairs. So the one thing to notice is that because of the commutation relation, we only need to worry about polynomials taken in any order that we pick. So say Q, P, T, and P, T. All polynomials can be expressed as some of these, because if we permute any two elements up to adding polynomial terms of lower order, they're all equivalent. So if we can enumerate them by just order by order by just looking at polynomials of this form. Okay, the constraint that corresponds classically to a time deparameterized version of a free particle has this form. We have that basically energy and the classical form of energy must add up to zero. We will systematically impose the constraints order by order by just using this order in polynomials in our algebra elements. And as you can see, our algebra is infinite dimensional, includes all polynomials with all of these powers, so we will get infinitely many constraint functions. So far, we haven't used any approximation. So we have this giant phase space. That's infinite dimensional. We put an infinite number of constraint conditions on it. Now, to get leading order corrections to classical behavior, we will expand about the classical limit. So to add the leading orders in quantum parameters, so we need some functions on this phase space that measure quantumness of any particular region. So here we choose moments of observables. which are basically nonlinear functions of expectation values. And they can be expanded for semi-classical states in powers of h bar to the half. This can be verified for Gaussian states very easily, but any state that looks like Gaussian should have this expansion. So this expression inside of the bracket is completely symmetrized. So I take various powers. In particular, if I only have p squared here, this would be the spread of the wave function if all the other powers are zero, and et cetera. So we proceed in the following way to reduce the system of constraints using the semi-classical approximation. Recast all our constrained equations in terms of those moments of observables. We assign appropriate powers of h bar to the half, and then above some order n, we drop all the terms that have a total order of greater than n for some n. This reduction for this system and for the class of systems that I refer to, any finite dimensional Lie algebra generated with a polynomial constraint, we will always get a finite number of non-trivial first class constraints and a closed Poisson structure. So let's see how this works out in practice for our free Newtonian particle. First of all, so we do this up to second order here. To second order, in four variables, we have four expectation values of our four variables, and we have four spreads or standard deviations, and there are six cross variables where the expression inside is symmetrized between the two operators. So going to second order, we have 14 different variables instead of four. There are five non-trivial constraints left. Out of the infinite number of constraints, we've only got five. And if you notice, the terms in red all appear linearly. This is basically due to linearity of the time conjugate momentum in our constraint. So the non-relativistic situation has this simplification that appears. These can all be eliminated straightforwardly in favor of the other variables that appear in the constraint. For now, just for the purpose of these expressions looking a little simpler, because five variables is a lot. So Gaussian invariant functions for this system can easily be found, and they appear in blue, and I use scripted letters for them. There's five of them, and they satisfy commutation relations, or Poisson relations, sorry, that you would expect to come from one canonical pair. So the five true degrees of freedom that we have left are exactly as if one canonical pair has been reduced by our constraint. Oops. So to identify these Gaussian invariant variables as observable quantities, they need to satisfy additional conditions. They have to be real. Their squares have to be positive, and their moments have to satisfy a version of Schwarz inequality. In order to interpret, so now these are all static. There is no dynamics happening. We have these five variables that describe our system once and for all, once we specify them, subject to these restrictions. In order to interpret, to go back to a classical particle in the absence, no, a Newtonian particle without potential, we want to basically interpret the variables associated with this pair as evolving in the variable given by expectation value of time. So we have four gauges left. It may not be obvious. We have five constraints, but because Poisson structure is degenerate, they only produce four non-degenerate flows. So we fix three of them in the simplest possible manner. And basically invert the gauge, the gauge invariant quantities to solve for these five variables in terms of gauge invariant quantities, the constants of motion and t appearing in red. And this is exactly the you know, it might not be obvious, you might not have seen the equations for a free Newtonian particle in this form, but it is what you'd expect to get. If you set t equal to zero, you notice that the blue quantities are basically the initial value the initial values for our evolution. So just one final point I'd like to make is that in this particular example, once we've imposed the constraints and once we fixed 3 degrees, 3 gauge degrees of freedom, there's basically 2 ways to recover dynamics. One is, as suggested above, we use the expectation value of time, use the expressions for the gauge invariant quantities, and invert them somehow to show how variables generated by Q and P correlate with this gauge parameter time. The other thing we could have done is we could have used the quantum corrected version of the constraint and used this Poisson bracket. It does generate a gauge flow on this phase space that exactly coincides in this case with we would get exactly the same system of equations this way. The second method could still be used to define a trajectory, a dynamical trajectory, even when we don't have a particularly nice time variable to eliminate. I can't really make a stronger statement because I've not analyzed any non-relativistic systems in detail. Relativistic systems in detail. So the issues could be more complicated there. But this might be a point of interest for people dealing with cosmology. So to summarize, the goal was to add leading order quantum corrections to systems with constraints. We proceeded by treating the space of all linear maps from an algebra to complex numbers as a Poisson phase space. We defined quantum constraints on this space, reduced the system using a semi-classical expansion, and forced reality, positivity, and uncertainty are true observables, and recovered dynamics as a gauge correlation. Up to the point of interpretation, the procedure is straightforward. And another advantage is that solutions, if we add a perturbative term to the constraint, it should only affect equations perturbatively. So perturbation theory could be used to modify a known solution. Hopefully, I can't demonstrate that here, but that's a hope. We have used an approximation. As with all approximations, it's difficult to analyze how stable this regime that we assumed we're in is. One thing that might come is quantum variables as clocks that could be used in cosmology. Thank you very much. Yeah.
So if you actually take the constraint function and any element of algebra,
right,
say that the string and the rest is, then that would be the same as everybody else. Mm-hmm. You basically are saying it is equivalent to one.
Right.
But your main point is that you just want to just truncate somehow.
Right.
And you're just like saying that constraint multiplied by Q, for example, if I just truncate to all one.
Right.
This looks like an awfully big equation.
Right.
So now we might go to some order due to the n. In what sense am I approximating what Dirac and everybody else would call as a physical state? And you're just asking much less for the physical state by truncating.
These reality, positivity, and uncertainty conditions are part of what.
But that still would leave a lot of. I mean, in terms of ordinary quantum mechanics, if I have a state psi, and I have impulse c times psi equal to 0.
Right.
And if I take any element of algebra A now.
Right.
And of course, A times c times psi is obviously times c times psi.
Right.
If I take the expectation value, which is.
Right.
Then what you're saying is that I got psi, A, C, psi is equal to zero.
Right.
I can take A on the other side, then we don't worry about psi.
Right.
And I get A psi, times C psi equal to zero. And this should be true for all possible A's.
Right.
That is a very strong condition.
Right.
That C psi itself should be true. And you are asking that this should be true only for the n
You're saying that
if I truncate this to some order.
Okay, yeah, to right. But I'm also truncate the degrees of freedom to that same order. For a linear constraint, that's not awfully interesting. You can see that order by order, the system. Right. Well, I appreciate the comments. Thank you. Well.